This is an ABC podcast.
This is Neat and Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinidar Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Bulavinaka, Dolavina to our Fijian listeners and welcome everyone to Neesian Footy, the number one place to get your Pacifica footy news and stories in the Rugby League and Rugby Union Worlds. My name is Sam Wykes and for the final time in 2024, alongside me is my Cook Island brother, fresh from the motherland, Tinirau Arona T. You are glowing.
Kia ora, Sammy. Yes.
Why are you glowing? Tell
that,
everyone.
It's that Rarotonga sun, mate. It hits different. Kia ora to all our new listeners over in Cook Islands in Rarotonga. It was lovely to be home for a few days and touch base and, you know, launch our FM service in the Cook Islands. But Sammy, I did miss you. I did feel that little piece of me, you know, without you there over in the island. But we're here. We're here for the last show of the year. So let's finish with a bang. Now, on today's show, we have our final Neesian Knowledge. So at the end of every Monday, we play Neesian Knowledge.
I can't believe it's here.
And
I can't believe we are finally the loser, to determine.
Yes, the loser has to get a Neesian footy tattoo on their bum bum. And I cannot lose because we are at a draw and I have to answer Sammy's questions. But also, you know, it's quiet across rugby league and rugby union, so we have a few bits from our favourite chats we had on the show this year.
Yes, we are in for a big one, final episode of the year. Let's get into it.
Moment of the week.
Well, there can't be a bigger moment than your trip over to the Cook Islands, and when you were sending those photos through to... There was a bit of me. Well, there was a lot of me just like looking at that phone in, oh, I don't know. Not anger's not the right word, but just like a part of me was gone too.
Yeah, I could sense a bit of frustration or not, jealousy, a little bit of jealousy.
Yeah, a bit of everything. But happiness as well.
You know
well.
Why? Because happiness you're well. Only sending the two-word responses. Cool. Cool. Oh, that looks cool.
That looks cool. And then I saw your wife saying work trip as well on her Instagram feed. I was like, that's not your work trip. That should be our work trip.
Yes, I just landed home from Rarotonga on the weekend. And, man, what an experience. I got to spend the 3 days there and loved every minute. I think from the first moment I collected my bags, walked out of the doors, and you see the billboards of our faces there.
Were you on there?
I was on there. I was in the middle, unfortunately.
Right, front and center?
There's six of us. Yes, six of us on there. I got in the middle, and unfortunately, your big head didn't make the cut.
That's all right, mate.
But you know, the love during our speech at the Australian High Commissioner's residence where we had our official launch. Now, that was a cool one where surrounded by great leaders within our community, and I got to share a speech there and shared a bit about where I come from, the journey me and you have been on here on Neesian Footy, and then the small part that we play with the big ABC Pacific team and shared a bit about the other show. So still hold that real strong passion for my country, where we're, you know, when we're here on Neesian Footy. So it was cool to be able to share that. Also got to catch up with the Prime Minister, Mark Brown, Cook Islands Prime Minister. Always cool to catch up with him. We first touched cross paths in the 2013 Rugby League World Cup. So we got to have a cool chat. Now, before I forget, Sammy, what's our rule when we go on our trips?
What's our rule?
Yeah, if one of us go on a trip, what's the rule?
Yeah, I was going to say, don't leave your koi behind, but you already broke that rule.
Well, the other rule is when you come back,
you bring gifts.
Yes. And when you went to a number of different places, you always brought back a gift. So I got a couple of things.
What have you got for me?
These were kindly gifted from Frankie Toa from the island. She works in the rugby league and rugby union space.
Bears.
Nah, it's the Tupapa
Panthers.
Tupapa Panthers polo,
yes,
mate.
Yes.
And we've also got a Cook Islands Rugby League singlet for you, mate.
Oh, stop it. This is Christmas. Oh, my goodness. This is amazing. Oh, I'm going to get this on right now. Anyway.
But yes, while you get them on.
Let me get that on. Yeah,
I'll go back to my highlights. It was cool that a lot of the people on the island, they came, they showed love and, you know, explained. Actually, a lot of people come up and said, hey, say hi to your mum and dad for me. So it's cool to see that dad, you're still remembered on the island, the great Momotoa Aruna from Tupapa. And we also had the event in Avaroa where we were meeting the locals, we're handing out ABC merch on behalf of all our team, and it was cool to, you know, really share that love. Damn, that looks good on
that
you,
looks
mate.
Good, eh? The purple.
Do you like the patterns on that
I
one?
Do.
Tupapa Panthers.
Yeah, shout out to the Tupapa Panthers. Hopefully you go well next year. Before you keep going on about the Cook Islands, two things. The Prime Minister, do you get to go first name basis or is it formal? Or do you go Brownie up to or how are you going? Or is it, how did you address him?
I addressed him as I would address all of my mates. Just gave him a big high five or a big, you know, big clap, and then gave him a big hug, and then said, "How's things going? How's work as the Prime Minister?" Because when we did talk in 2013, he wasn't the Prime Minister at the time, so he gave me a bit of a rundown and the amount of work that he does, you know, representing our nation. So it was cool. I just, you know, just being myself.
Yeah, nice. And you were, the last time you were in the Cook Islands was back in 2016 for your brother's wedding, and maybe the other times you've gone back, maybe as a player or while you were still playing. This time around, obviously we've been working in this space for a long time now, sharing stories of the Pacific. You got to go home to the motherland with your wife. What was this time? Or what was different about this time? Other than the obvious.
No, it was, you know what was cool was getting a message from my mum. Oh, actually, it was my brother, and it was on our family chat. And he kept asking me questions, how is everything going? You know, what's home like? Our mum and papa are buried in Matavita, so making sure that we're all over there. And then he sent a message. He goes, I think I'm more proud of you going around as, you know, this time representing this platform that you're on through media than when you went over to represent our nation in rugby league. So for me, I was like, oh, that's cool.
That's cool,
that's
man.
Cool.
To that's be a able big to, statement.
To be able to, and I shared it with the news reporter there, to be able to have this platform and, you know, show all our Cook Island people or juniors or kids that there is another pathway, whether it's in media. You know, if there's just this young Cook Islander boy here speaking through the radio on Nija Daily, you know, it just creates that pathway for, you know, if you can see it, what's that saying?
If you can, you can't see what you can't be what you can't see.
There you go. You can't be what you can't see. Well, I did miss you, Sammy, but I hope you enjoy your Tupapa Panthers polo and your Cook Islands Rugby League singlet. And thanks again to Frankie Toa for gifting us them beautiful gifts.
Hello guys, it's Cassie Staples here from the Cronulla Sharks team, and you're listening to Nation Footy.
Well, well done, T. I'm very happy for you, my friend. Even though I didn't come through on those text messages like I was happy, but I genuinely was happy for you being over there in the motherland. And we do have a bit of rugby union to get across here because we had the Oceania Sevens tournament, which wrapped up on the weekend in the Solomon Islands. At that beautiful stadium in Honiara where they played the Pacific Games last year, where we were able to go to as well. And there was plenty of Nijian talent playing for both the women's and men's teams over there. And we saw the regular countries like Fiji, Tonga and Samoa, but honestly, the best thing about this tournament, we got to see countries that don't normally get to play on the circuit on a regular basis on the International Sevens tournaments. We saw Vanuatu, we saw Tuvalu, we saw the Solomon Islands, we saw Niue, Nauru, Kiribati, the Cook Islands got a start as well.
You know who was the coach for the men's team? Clive Nicholas, the guy that we had on explaining the tattoo, Cook Island tattoos.
Oh, was he the coach for
He's the head coach for the men's sevens team. There I caught go. Him just before he flew out.
Oh, that's unreal. They lost to Tonga, which was great. but we also saw American Samoa. Yeah, all of them were playing and representing their people with a lot of passion, and it was heartwarming to see all those players, both in the men's and the women's game, being over there and just lighting up the fields. And we also saw in the men's Tuvalu, they made history by beating Japan 21-19 in their quarterfinal game to make the semifinals. They ended up losing to Fiji 38-0, with Fiji eventually going down to Samoa in the grand final, with Samoa winning 17-12. So big congratulations to Samoa. But for Tuvalu, there's not that many people on the islands in Tuvalu. But for them to come out and beat a country like Japan and make it to the semis and create history, like, that's what it's about. That's what that tournament is about at the Oceania Sevens. It's about those smaller nations having a platform to play and perform. And a big shout out must go to everyone involved getting this tournament off the ground and running. So big thank you for all your hard work and dedication, because opportunities like this, they allow kids across the Pacific to dream big, you know, work hard, and make the impossible possible, because there is a genuine pathway for them to do that.
Well, speaking of that, Sammy, I did catch up with Clive Nicholas, the head coach for the Cook Island Men's, and he said that exact thing was creating a pathway for the locals to be able to go to Solomon Islands and compete against these other teams. And, you know, the footage that goes across media, you know, maybe someone's watching that, the highlight reel, the big try, some, you know, talented kids from The Rock, from Cook Islands, and to be able to have that opportunity could open more doors. So, yes, thank you to everyone who was involved to create this space for all our athletes across the Pacific to play on that stage.
Absolutely. And staying on the Sevens, we saw the second tournament of the World Sevens Circuit was played over in Cape Town, South Africa. And after their success in Dubai last week, Fiji, they were looking to go back-to-back tournament wins, but they lost in a nail-biter to France in the semi-finals, 19-7. But T, I know you were—you probably wouldn't have watched this, but their pool game, Fiji's pool game against Uruguay, was honestly, it was out of this world. 70-7 they won.
70-7?
70-7.
How many minutes and a half?
7 minutes.
So 14 minutes. They scored 77 points.
70 points. Uruguay got a consolation
try.
They conceded one try, but it was just
try after try.
And just those freakish ones too. You know, like, nah, surely they can't score off that, where it's just like a tap back through the legs, around the back, get tackled, pop it up. Everything they touched turned to gold in that game. And I thought, holy, they are in for a big one. They're probably going to win it after that game against Uruguay. But they went down, in a nail-biter.
To France.
And Fiji, they ended up playing for third place against Spain and won that one 47-10. So they, you know, they didn't get the big win, but they finished third, which goes to their points tally towards the back end of the Sevens Circuit next year. And we also saw the women's. They played off for ninth place, so Fiji ended up losing to China in that one, 14-12. So they haven't had the best of tournaments, the Fijian women, in the Sevens Circuit so far, but hopefully they can improve for Perth next year, late in January. So there's plenty of opportunities to prepare and perform in that tournament. But that's all we have for Rugby Union, T.
Off
to Rugby League. And if you talk about the Pacific champs one more time.
No, we're done with the Pacific champs, mate. There is not that much news. As you know, everyone's preparing for the new seasons leading into the Christmas break. So I bet a lot of the boys across the NRL are feeling that heat. You know, it'd be, you know, 2-3 weeks into training now, only a couple of weeks to go before they go on to their Christmas break. And these are usually the hardest ones, those back-end ones where they've tapered off a little bit and then they're just going to up the load before their break. But there is a little bit of news. Jojo Fifita, the brother of David Fifita, reportedly he has re-signed with the Titans until the end of 2027. That's due to be announced soon. And, yeah, that's it for me and rugby league news.
That's it. That has to be the quietest I've ever heard of rugby league not being existent on this show.
There is a bit happening in the back, maybe.
There is. And speaking of ones in the back, this is what caught my eye. I don't know if you're across this one. Up at the Broncos, new coach Mike McGuire.
I heard there have been some big sessions.
I think getting flogged.
Yeah.
Well, a part of that, usually when you get flogged when it's hot in the preseason, for the boys with the, you know, really good rigs, what's the first thing they usually do? when they're training?
When it's hot, shirt off.
Shirt off straight
get
away.
Get the sun, get the vitamin D.
That's what, yeah, they want to show off their good rigs, especially the Ferraris.
Yeah, especially if you've got a good set of abs, some nice pectorials.
If you've got it all, they always say you can't keep the Ferrari in the garage. It has to be out there for everyone to see. But Michael Maguire has brought in a new policy where the boys aren't allowed to take off their shirt. What do you make of this?
I think it would be a good thing for those young boys up at Brisbane. I know that when I was coming through, I was probably the first one to take my shirt off, even though I didn't deserve
to. Do you have a Ferrari?
No.
You have a Ferrari?
No. I had the worst rig. But I would take it off just because it was genuinely hot. But then you'd see some other boys that did have the abs on, so they would, you know, take the shirt off, and then I'd put my shirt back on. But yeah, no, it's a, you know, Michael Maguire is one of those coaches and wanting to plant some seeds in the young boys' minds on just there to train hard. Get there, train hard, get the work done, get out.
I think that's what I've noticed about Michael Maguire. He likes to make a statement. We think about the statement he made when he became Origin coach. James Tedesco, no longer in the team. Even this little statement here, but it's a big statement because up in Brisbane, there's a lot of good-looking Roosters up
there.
Very
good-looking.
You know, they probably love to take their shirt off. He just wants to bring that humility back and just let all the hard work do the talking. No external noise, no nothing. Get the work done. Get out, prepare, and go again tomorrow. So yeah, he's effort on effort, carry-on.
Broncos didn't have the best of seasons this year, and he's probably coming in and just wanting to make these changes. So hopefully the results change next year, and we see Brisbane Broncos, you know, in that top eight, you know, playing finals footy.
And the reason why?
They do have the talent there.
The reason why? Because they didn't take their shirt off in the preseason. That's what we're going to put it
focused.
Down to.
We're focused. Exactly. Locked in.
But that's all I wanted to bring in for rugby league. And that's all we've got. That's all we've got. All the news done. Let's go over to our favourite chats.
Too easy.
Hello, Falava. I'm Jeffrey Totomanga Allen, and you're listening? You're listening to Nijan Footy.
Yes, my name is Jeff. Hopefully he's going well up there in the Brisbane Heat for his pre-season training. But as I said, it's our last show of the year, so we're going to do something different. We are going to play some of our favourite chats from 2024. And to start us off, T, we're going to play Mona Lisa Soliola.
She is a character. And it was cool that we got to watch her play for the Fetu Samoa. You could not miss her. The blonde hair.
The blonde hair.
But she can play some footy. And now I know when she speaks about her father putting her through that training sessions, and then you see the product that she is on the field. Man, she is definitely going places. So strap in. Here's Mona Lisa Soliola from this year's chat.
My parents have their own room and they sleep with the twins. And then I'll explain the age gaps as well. So my sister, the one that's under me, she's 16 and she sleeps with the one that's 14. They stay in the same room. And then we currently stay in a 3-bedroom house. Them two are in that room. And then my grandpa, he stays in that room by himself because he's like the eldest and, you know, we've got to take care of him. And then in the second city room, we have all the boys stay in the second city room. And then in the living room, that's where all the younger kids stay. So then I'll just crash, like, I'll either crash in the second city room. I'll just crash wherever I can fit, really.
All the mattresses getting taken to the lounge room. Everyone falls asleep there. Yeah, we know the drill.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Malai styles. It's they're actually really fun, and memories that I've kept pretty much my whole life is those are the fun parts that you've had with your family.
Yeah, 100%. Like, as much as people would think it's a struggle, I feel like these are like real core memories as we grow up.
Yeah. Moments that you'll cherish forever. Now, let's go to your discus story. How did that come about, and how far in your discus career did you make it?
So, yeah, in primary school, just local here in Lidcombe, I've grown up here like my whole life, I was like one of the fastest girls here, right? And then I got to like regional stage where I was like, no, I got this in the bag, like whatnot. I came dead last in the regional. So I was like, damn. Oh, well, whatever. So then I was trying to figure out ways to make it all the way to the next level and the next level because I had no idea. Like, I've never experienced the next level and I was really, like, hungry to get to the next level.
Is that just anyway, to get a day off school?
Yeah. I'm carnival with my biggest day off school. the next level after that was New South Wales. And the only way that I knew how to get to New South Wales, and my dad kind of explained it to me, was I got to somehow like use my fog genes. So I've got to think of something like as like a strong opponent of how to get to the next level. So then we're looking at like track, the track's point of view, and he's looking at me. He's like, nah, you're not running 800 meters. You're not running 400 meters. And then we got to the field events and he was like, oh, why don't you try like shot put or like javelin or like discus? And I was like, yeah, okay, that's cool. So then, yeah, I started doing discus, started doing shot put, and I was getting the hang of it. Like, oh, wow, like this is cool. This is mad. So then I started training for it on the regular. But I started off going to, there's a park down the road. It's called Phillips Park. I started going to Phillips Park with a saucepan.
Like, oh, yeah?
The really small. Yeah, and that's what I was training with.
like a plate. Yeah.
The plate, yeah, is that like what you were practicing with?
Yeah, that's what I was practicing with, because we didn't know that you could buy like equipment. So we were just like, oh, we'll get like the closest thing to it. And then we would strap on like toothpaste or like would like stick on heavy stuff to make up for the weight of it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. You know, when I'm hearing this story and I think of those, well, I guess we would always call them as fresh moments, or, you know, those funny stories, yeah, like, this is it. Well, this is it.
Think about it. Where do you even buy a discus?
Oh, there's this thing called Amazon these days, Google online, somewhere.
No way. You improvise.
Marketplace.
Not when you've got 10 kids. You're thinking, how do I improvise and make myself a discus?
I'm assuming that if you break that, like, do you tell your parents that you broke the plate and there's no more, and just grab a new one out of the cupboard, and then all of a sudden there's no...
Oh, no. I was not allowed to break it. I was not allowed. I had to make sure that I threw it that far, but very soft.
So you're telling me the way you learned how to throw a discus was sticking things onto a sauce plate and going down to the park and then throwing it, practicing your technique. That is amazing.
All right, and next question, how do you measure? How did you measure? I'm assuming there was no measuring tape. Is it you stepped it out?
We didn't have measuring tape. And my dad, he had gotten his work boots measured and they were exactly 30 centimetres. So he would go footstep for footstep and then that was 1 metre. Footstep was another metre. So he'd like do like step by step all the way out to wherever I threw it to, and then we'd kind of guess, oh, that's 30 metres.
That's impressive.
So going back to state, did you end up making state?
Yeah, so I ended up making state. Oh, I made regional that year. Wait, first of all, I made regional that year, broke the regional record, then went to state, came first, and then I went to nationals in Tasmania. And I feel like that was a cool memory for me and my dad, because that was the first time I've taken my dad like anywhere out of state. And he's never been to Tasmania, which was cool. So then like I get to like tell people like, I took my dad to Tasmania. But yeah, I took him there. And then at Tasmania, I think I got silver.
Wow, that's impressive.
I'm just thinking of, you know, the parents that have taken their kids, you know, say from a private school or something, they've got this special coach, they've got the latest discus, they're training. And then it's like, oh, how did you get? Yeah, with a saucer and some toothpaste and my dad's 30-centimeter boot.
win the silver medal in Australia.
Exactly. And so can you just I know we've got to get to your footy bit soon, but...
No, let's just stay here. Don't worry about the footy.
<I know. laughs> But that moment that you're sharing with your dad, I can only imagine how proud he would have been of you and travelling with his eldest daughter down there. What was that like, and were there any of those chats before... You know, you started throwing or for your events?
Yeah. So we had gotten down there. He had told me like prior to going down that like this is the first time I've been to Tasmania. Like this is real cool. Obviously, we both got emotional at the time. Like I've been here, but I remember briefly just before they so at athletics carnivals they'll call your event three times. I'm putting my shoes on. I'm putting on like whatever I've got to put on. And then I'm about to go and he stops me and he just goes, no matter what, all I need you to know is if you don't come back with the gold medal, that's it. And then we start laughing. But like, I'm like laughing, like nervous laughing, because I'm like, I don't know if he's being serious or not. So then I start nervous laughing and then he goes, no, I'm just joking. Just no matter what, I'm proud of you. And then yeah, that was a cute moment we had. But I feel like, yeah, if he didn't make that joke, it would be like real, like cliche, like, you know. But he's like that. And I feel like that's something I'm really grateful for, is that as much as it's a serious moment, he knows how to really ground me and bring me back.
What a way to calm the nerves.
Love your sport? We'll join Tiana Penatani and Sam Wykes for your weekly hit on That Pacific Sports Show on ABC Australia. Each week, watch as sports stars from around the region join Tiana and Sam to share inspiring stories, review the week's results, and discuss the incredible sporting prowess of athletes with Pacific Island heritage. That Pacific Sports Show. Watch it on ABC Australia every Wednesday, 5:30 p.m. PNG time.
But let's cross over to your rugby league journey. You only started playing not that long ago. You crossed over from netball. You know, what was the reason for, you know, leaving netball and then jumping straight into rugby league?
Or even leaving discus and jumping to,
yeah,
like leaving a successful sport and then trying something different.
Mm. Yeah, so I think from athletics to netball, it was just only because I think every one of my friends at the time was doing the same thing. Like, we had all started in athletics and we were all transitioning over to netball. Something that really inspired me to come from netball to rugby was being compared to my younger sister. So her name's Becca. Oh my gosh. Just, yeah, I used to get compared to her all the time. It was like, oh, you're playing a baby sport. Oh, you just don't do contact.
How old are we talking here?
16, was it? She's 16 now?
Yeah, she's a 16-year-old. Okay. So she was, I think at the time I was 14, she was 11. But she was playing in under 16s, I think. Wow. Yeah, she was playing a few ages up.
So she was playing league, you're playing netball, and you're getting compared to the league player.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they just always wanted me to play league because everyone else in my family plays league. I was the only one that went through athletics, then netball, then footy. So, yeah, like, I got compared to her, and then that's what made me switch to rugby, because I was like, obviously I want to get offended, because I'm like, I can do what you're doing, bro. Like, so, and then, yeah, I started playing alongside her. We're both playing in the 16s comp. Yeah, that's basically how I started playing footy.
You spoke about the toothpaste and the plate to help you train and prepare. I'm curious to know, was there anything, like, out of the box that helped you prepare for rugby league and, you know, contact, passing, anything like that?
Okay, so there's only like one thing that's a bit weird, was I didn't have football shoes that would fit me. I would always wear my sister's shoes, or I'd always wear my brother's shoes. On game day, obviously I had football shoes, but when we trained by ourselves, I'd be wearing running spikes.
As in like the athletic spikes?
Yeah, I'd be wearing athletic spikes.
Are you even allowed to wear them?
No, because some of the, like, my brothers and my sisters, like, some of them do have like scars and everything, and we laugh about it now, but like back in the day it was like I would like slice their like hand and they'd be like, ah.
Oh, so you would wear them at like down at the park and train with them against other people?
Yeah.
Oh, that is the best. Is there someone in your mind that you think, okay, that's the person that is at that level, but also been an influence for yourself and your generation of young NRLW athletes?
Yeah, there is someone that I've been looking up to, and she's always been a very big influence of mine. And it's crazy because there is a quote out there that is, work until your idols become your rivals. And it's quite scary to think that she is a rival at the moment, but she still influences me to this day. And that person being Tiana Penatani.
Yes. She
is a very big influence of mine. She knows how to hold herself accountable, hold herself strong, but also knowing that she's a human at the end of the day. Do you know what I mean? Like, yep. As much as she's an idol, she knows how to move and have fun with her life. And I think that's something that helps me strive to know that everything will eventually be okay.
Final question from me. When you do go down to Canberra for the NRLW, Do you miss your family, that family time, like being around that chaotic house of yours where you got so many kids running around and a lot of noise? Or do you actually like that silence and the independence when you do go down to Canberra on your own?
I definitely do get days where I really do miss my family, and I miss the like noise 24/7, and I miss this. But I think that's something that's really good about being away from family, is, as much as I'm away from family, I'm creating a new family.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So I feel like just always having the sense of some sort of family around helps me cope with not having real family there. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%.
So I feel like, yeah, as much as I do miss my family and I do miss how it is at home, I always end up finding some sort of family wherever I do go.
What a chat. And I still can't get over her playing in running spikes and sticking toothpaste on a saucer to practice discus. Man, she is one of a kind. And next up is from one of the greatest to have ever played rugby union, the game they play in heaven, the great Sir Michael Jones. He's a pioneer for all the Pacific footy players. And honestly, this is a really special chat because how he paved the way. And T, I know it was your mum's favourite player from back in the day.
Well, when I was saying the speech in the Cook Islands, and the moment I said Sir Michael Jones was on our show on Nijan Footy, you could hear the audience just go, wow, like, you know, no yeah. way.
Everyone knows Sir
you
Michael.
You got Sir Michael Jones. But, mate, just honoured to have a man like him on our show. So here is the great Sir Michael Jones.
No, not at all. I mean, it's a wonderful privilege and honour. I suppose there's certain settings where you've got to use that, but I can assure you with the brothers, it's bro. You know, they used to call me Iceman, so most of my brothers now call me Ice Cream or Ice Block, so feel free to call me any of the above.
But
very kind of you, Sam. Very appreciate your respect. Thank you. But yeah, Michael, brother, bro, Ice Cream, all good.
you probably get this question a lot about being knighted and getting receiving the honor of being a sir. How does that come about? Like, what was that process like?
Good question. You know, I suppose you just do life. You know, you just be all that you can be, and you know, you stay true to who you are and your the way you were raised, your values, your roots, the principles on which you were, I suppose, parted into you, and I suppose modeled for you. And I was very grateful to be and blessed to be raised by a wonderful mother who raised us. I lost my father when I was 4 years old, so we were a big Pacific Island family in West Auckland, and I just had a mother who modeled unconditional love. She was a strong Christian, so it just was always there for me how to, you know, to serve others and to love others unconditionally. So that's shaped the way I've done life, and I continue to do life. And I suppose, you know, the honor of the knighthood was recognizing the years of service, and it's a journey that continues. Yeah, it's a privilege, and I just love it. It's what gets me up every morning. Cool. and drives me and motivates me and inspires me.
We're definitely going to touch more on that, your service to the game, both on and off the field, and especially for our Pacifica people. But I just want to touch on something, because you're a humble man with such huge stature within the game. We've got some audio of you scoring the very first try at the Rugby World Cup, the first ever Rugby World Cup try, and that humility and that, you know, sense of, oh, no big deal. You just get up and just run off as if it was like nothing, you know. You get a little tap on the head from one of your players, and it was just back to business as always. So, like, did you not want to celebrate as hard, or is that just how you roll?
Brothers, you know, I come from a generation where you certainly didn't make too much of a thing of it. You just got up, and if you got a handshake and a pat on the back, you were doing well, or, you know, because that was our generation. So it was a bit of that's all we knew, and indeed that's how we rolled, I suppose. But it was also knowing that celebration and how you, even though I'm sure I was doing cartwheels inside of me, and my heartbeat was running 100 miles an hour, and everything in me were probably wanting to scream and shout and celebrate. I mean, it just wasn't what we did. And I would have got a clip over the years from some of the old fellas if I'd done anything more than what I did do. And that was, so it's funny how you know, you're shaped by your generation and how you did things back then. There's a lot more celebration, a lot more encouragement to express yourself, but it was totally a different world that we grew up, even back in the late 80s, you know. We're just wired up differently.
you mentioned our culture, and I just want to ask, like, how did you celebrate your Samoan heritage, you know, while you were playing?
It's a good question. I mean, when I first broke into the Auckland scene, 18, 19, just a shy Polynesian boy from West Auckland, I was raised by my mum, very sheltered, big ainga. So, I always speak to the fact that I'm a product of a village. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. I'm the living testament of that. I was raised by my uncles and aunties and cousins and my older brothers and sisters, and it was a big village. You know, typical Samoan family growing up in West Auckland. We had a smallish house, but we had probably anything from 12 to 14 people living in that home. But I was the youngest. They nurtured me. They loved on me. They raised me. So I was really surrounded by my Samoan identity and culture every single day. You know, we church was a big part of our lives, sports, you know, ainga, you know, family, our culture, we lived it every day. So it was modeled for me. So when I got to the Auckland environment back in the mid-80s, I was out of my comfort zone, because apart from Joe Stanley, I was very grateful to have him, and Papali'i Peter Fatialofa was there. He was the minder. He looked after me. But apart from those two, maybe Matai Fakinen, good Cook Island brother who played for Samoa, one of those Cook Islanders who somehow finds some Samoan blood, eh, bro? Somewhere along the way. All the bishops. And, you know, there was plenty of them, but, you know, they were fantastic manu players. But apart from those guys, it was just a very, I suppose, European, you know, Kiwi Palangi team. And it was a really strange environment, and I was outside my comfort zone. But I learned a lot in that, and I learned, you know, just being true to, you know, you can't compromise, or you can't water down who you are. You just got to be your heart, who you are. And thankfully, they accepted us. And I think Joe Stanley had broken, you know, again, just recognized Sir B.G. Williams, you know, the great Samoan Cook Island All Black of the 70s, who broke the ceiling for us. And so we were accepted. And as long as we play well, train hard, don't take any shortcuts, stay true to, you know, who you are, and they respected you. And so I found my sort of feet in my space. And I think the thing was just be who you are again. And I think that even though I was very shy, pretty intimidated by, you know, all of a sudden being thrown in a team that had 13, 14 All Blacks in it. You know, you think of the teams of the Auckland environment in the mid-80s when I think we didn't lose a game for 5 or 6 years, you know.
Yeah, right.
It was a crazy era. But there weren't many Polynesian boys, and then some came a bit later. You know, Inga Tuingamala, Ronnie Clark, and then you've seen the proliferation of Pacifica. You know, adding to the Māori flavour, a presence of Pacifica power.
Yeah, speaking of, I guess the Pacifica power that you mentioned, what have you made of the progression of Pacifica rugby in the presence of the Fijian Drua and then Moana Pacifica, and how they've, improved over the 3 years?
It's been a phenomenal thing in the sense that, particularly the Drua, because, you know, they had been around a few additional years in the NRC in Australia, so they had an identity, and there was a pathway that really was there to support and build Fijian rugby. And I think we've seen the benefits of that, and particularly if you think of the last World Cup, I mean, they were the darlings of that Rugby World Cup. Pacifica was established for that same why. That's our why, is to build particularly Tongan Samoa rugby and other smaller Pacific Island rugby. You know, the Drua is there, and that's very clearly one of the key pathways now for young Fijians to participate in professional rugby. You know, the Super Rugby Pacific, would like to think, is one of the hardest professional competitions in the world. That's exactly where our men need to be. They're not in Europe, and if they're not going to Japan, there's probably a premier pathway to the Flying Fijians, for example. And there's a very much the same for the Manu and the Ikalitahi. And we saw that the last World Cup. I think Moana Pacifica had 14 boys playing in that Manu team, and maybe 13 or more in the Ikalitahi. So that's the fruits of the labour really starting to become a reality. You know, when we dreamed of this and when we saw that we needed to fight and advocate to have Pacifica and a Super Rugby team, a competition, and not left in the peripheries of world rugby and rugby this part of the world, you know, we have seen the benefits. It's taking a while for us to be as successful as in every way, but in that way we are successful big time, and it's bigger than rugby for us. It always has been. It means much more than that. Yep. You know, it's a movement that's about empowering and transforming our people and bringing hope and aspirations.
Now, one final question from me. Seeing your son play for Moana Pacifica for the first time, making his debut, how did that make you feel as a father?
Yeah, like any of us who are parents, we just want our kids to be the best they can be and pursue whatever it is that they dream to be, or, you know, they're wired up a certain way, and, you know, we just want them to go for it, and we'll support them all the way. So, yeah, it's so nice that Nico loves his rugby, and he's been gifted with skills and attributes, I suppose, and he's, you know, he's married that with the right attitude and hard work. So, I mean, it's cool to see him get some opportunities. It's just injuries, but like his old man, always gets injured a bit, but he's too young to get injured, but it probably hasn't helped him, you know, with the first few years, but he's still young. But no, it's a real joy, Sam. And obviously playing for Moana, that's special too. Like anything, you just want them to, whatever it was or whatever it is that they have a passion for and they have a desire to do, you just support them 110%. So I'm just like any dad in that respect. And, you know, I know it is sometimes hard for him because, you know, people have expectations, but he's got a good head on him. He gets it from his mother. and so he does it. He takes it in the stride. He's actually really deals with it really, really well.
I think you lead by example, and if he follows in your footsteps, he'll definitely have a bright future. Last one from me. So, Sammy, he mentioned earlier that you're the co-founder and chair of the Pacifica Rugby Hall of Fame, and recently we've seen you induct the great John Alomu. What was your relationship like with Jonah?
Yeah, when I reflect on it, I just feel so honoured and again, privileged that I played with him, thankfully more than I had to play against him. I only think I had to play against him once against Counties Manukau back in the day, but he was with me in the Blues and he was with me in the All Blacks, and man, it was just like such a dream having, you know, he was on one side, if you could imagine, and Joely Vendiri might have been on the, you know, wow. We had such great wingers. Yeah, I know, wow, right? It was like, man, just get it to the edges and just follow up. And And so, yeah, and Jonah was, you know, he was like our little brother because he was so young when we came in. So we were, you know, whether it was myself and Ronnie Clark or Fisa Tonu'u, particularly in the Blues, or Andrew Blows, you know, they were a bit younger, mind you, but our job was to take care of him. And it was a real privilege to just see him grow. We just also saw the hard things. You know, he was the first, honestly, the first real superstar, global superstar, and he took rugby through the stratosphere, you know, in terms of the global influence. And he was probably the greatest influencer on our game, to be fair. And you'll probably, I don't know, will we ever see another Jonah Lomu? Probably not. Real, truly global superstar. So I just feel very grateful that and blessed that I was there and when he was in his prime. And we sort of, all of us wish we could have done more for him, honestly, you know, because he was very dear to us, but we saw him go through things. And then obviously being that unwell, we never knew till later, you know, just his kidney problems. But it just enhanced our respect for him. And we've always been in awe of him because of that. You know, just really grateful to have played with him and for us to be able to acknowledge him as part of the Magnificent Seven, you know, along with Sir Brian Williams, George Smith, one of the great Wallaby, you know, Pacific Island
of course.
icons. Yeah, Brian Limar. Afio'o, Famosili, the captain of the Black Ferns, Waisali Sarevi, oh my gosh, it was so cool having him part of that. And then, of course, the late Peter Fatialofa. So that was our first inductees. And the important thing about those seven, they're all in the World Rugby Hall of Fame. So, you know, it was important to acknowledge them first. And again, the why of the Pacific Rugby Hall of Fame is to honour our and celebrate and never forget those who have gone before us. But it helps us to unify the Pacifica diaspora. I mean, you guys are part of that, you know, that's global, to then create a better future for the next generation of Jonah Lomus.
Hi, it's Maima Dalfa. I'm on the Camera Raiders. You're here listening to Nijin 40.
Before we get to Nijin knowledge, we just want to say a big meitaki ma'ata, a big thank you to all our guests who joined us here this year in 2024. Without you here on Nijin 40, there is no Nijin 40. So much love from myself, Sammy, and our Nijin 40 team.
Yeah, malo apito to all of you, all of our guests that came on. As T said, it wouldn't be a show without you sharing your stories on this platform because it goes direct to the villages in the islands and you're inspiring many, many, many boys and girls to follow your path. So big love and we'll see you next year. And now,
the moment has come, Nijin knowledge.
Nijin knowledge. T, why do you look nervous?
I'm not nervous, mate.
You ready to go?
There is no pressure on me whatsoever.
None.
Well, it's a draw. I can't lose.
Well, you can lose.
Why? If it's a draw?
No, because it could go to a a tiebreaker.
There's a tiebreaker?
See? Where were the details?
Anyway,
let's go.
Let's get to Nijan Footy. So
Nijan Knowledge.
Sorry, Nijan Knowledge. Every Monday on Nijan Footy, we end the show with Nijan Knowledge. And one of us will ask the other three questions. And throughout the whole year, we'll keep a score. And the loser has to get a Nijan Footy tattoo on their bum.
On the bum.
At the end of the year. The score is 21.5 each. Sammy will be asking me the questions. And yes, this is the last episode for the year. So
here we go.
Here we are. Here we go.
Here we go. Okay, the first one. So because it's a draw, I couldn't let you get the first. Man, if you get this first question too, that'll do me. That'll do me. So I've tried to make it hard, medium, and then one that you could potentially get.
So you've made them all hard.
No. Trust me, I'm not like you. I'm not like you. How long have we been running for? Like 50 weeks or something?
I gave you easy ones last week.
Yeah, please.
The flags.
Please, but let's get into it. The first one. This is the hard one. Cook Islands Rugby. How much do you know about Cook Islands Rugby Union?
Not much.
Okay, well, they played their first international test match in what year? And I'm not giving you any.
You want me to just guess the just year guess the that year. They play their ever
first ever
international Cook Island Rugby Union game?
Yep.
Wow.
No multiple choice. Just go
just
straight.
Give me the
nah.
Two decades, surely.
Nah, just have a crack.
Okay, we're going to play them games. 1986.
Oh, very close. 1971. They lost to Western Samoa 24-18. So we are now still locked at 21.5.
That was an awful question.
We'll get there. We'll get there. This one's a medium one. You should know this one. Maybe. One of our Cook Islander guests this year was Ruben Porter.
1971.
He made his debut for the West Tigers in the NRL this year. How many games did he end up playing in season 2024?
Wow, that's a decent question. How many games did Ruben play this year? Okay.
Maybe you should cover more West Tigers games throughout the year instead of Penrith and the Roosters or the big names.
The ones that I can remember. I'm going to go off my gut and say six.
Oh, so close. It's eight.
Oh, I was going to fall with six.
It was eight.
Damn. Underestimated, Ruben.
8 games. All right. This one, I'm going to give you a chance here, all right? Your last game of footy for the Cook Islands was at the World Cup in 2022, yeah?
Yep.
You lost to Tonga 92-10.
Oh, lucky you didn't tell me what the score was. I thought it was 96-6.
Now, that game where you lost to Tonga 92-10, and for those who are listening in the Cook Islands, you lost 92-10 to Tonga. All right. At the end of the game, there was a special moment where the Cook Islanders did their haka. What do you call your war dance again?
Pe'e.
The pe'e? How many of the players were wearing?
Oh, you're kidding
Tongan
me.
Tongan jerseys?
That was it. This is stitch up.
There's a multiple choice.
You can't go through every episode and finish with these questions.
There's multiple choice here. Multiple choice. How many of your Cook Island brothers were wearing Tongan jerseys while doing the pe'e? Is it A, 6, B, 5, or C, 4?
Oh, wow, wow, wow. Okay. For some reason, I want to take the middle one. Let's go 4.
It was 5. 5 of your Cook Island brothers.
Crap, stink.
There we go. So it's a draw.
Stink questions, mate.
All right, I'll give you one last one.
I'll
give you one easy one right now. Who was man of the match in that game?
Oh, who was man of the match that game?
Do you want multiple choice?
No.
It definitely wasn't anyone from the Cook Islands.
No.
Who killed it in that game? You know who killed it.
They all killed it. It was 92 points.
But there was one in particular player that was running amok.
It can't have been Isaiah.
He did play well.
No, it wasn't. It was someone that was quick and fast. Or was it someone that was strong and big, like all of them?
There was some big
I'll
boys
go
there.
David. Let's go David for Fafita.
Really? You're going to stay with David?
I can't even remember who were the other players. No, there were some other good players there.
I've given you that many chances. You might go offer me for...
You've ruined the whole...
How have I ruined it?
The whole year.
Why? I've given you four.
Did these get approved from Declan?
Mate, he actually sent them to me.
Did he?
Yeah.
Wow.
See?
See, because he always looks after you. That's why.
No, he doesn't.
Yes, he does. You know he does.
You sook.
You know he looks after you.
I hope you get it.
I love Sammy.
Hurry up. Who got man of the match?
I'm going to go with...
I must really want this tattoo because, man, how many chances have I given you?
I'm trying to remember who played in the game. Who played in the game? Someone
Come
big.
On, man.
I'm just going to stick with David.
It was Jason Tomalolo.
Oh, he would have been the other one. So hey, where do we go?
So where do we go here? There's a tiebreaker. There's a tiebreaker.
And let me guess. Declan sent you the question.
No. Apparently, it's like how we do Professor Paulo on the Fridays. It's going to be over the speaker. Isn't that what they said? No tiebreaker. Oh, dead set. I thought we were having a tiebreaker.
Oh, well, what do we do? Content. We'll just get a tattoo, half tattoo.
Is that what we're doing?
That looks like we have to do that.
I dead set thought there was a tiebreaker.
Get the cameras off. This is build up.
Well, so hang on. Do we have to get it together?
Let's get it together.
Which cheek do you want to go?
I will go my right cheek.
So I'll go left or right. Right as well.
Where's Declan going?
Where's Declan? Well, we're going to get a Nisha
producer.
Our first episode back next year, tattooist
we'll
in
get
the
a
studio.
Tattooist. I'm happy.
We'll
get a
Nisha footy tattoo.
Nisha footy tattoo.
Well, that's our time up for 2024. Felt like a little bit of a lead balloon from T's energy over there.
Yeah, because
but
of
it
your
has
lead
been a blast.
Balloon
it has been a blast this year. We've been sharing stories of our incredible Pacifica athletes in the rugby league and rugby in your world. So thanks again. We'll be back in 2025. Can't wait to see you all again.
Yes, much love to all our listeners and all our guests who have joined us this year in 2024. Ka kite. This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.